AEW hosted Double or Nothing yesterday. It is now Memorial Day. 5.5 hours. If you include the pre-show, 5.5 hours has to be the longest Double or Nothing that AEW has ever done. But I can happily tell you that it was a very good show with an outstanding main event. That is the match that I was most looking forward to. It took 5 hours to get there. The match I was waiting for was Will Ospreay and Hangman Page in the finals of the Owen Hart tournament to find out who would go on to challenge Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship in Texas at All In. And we now have our answer. And the answer is the Cowboy. Hangman Adam Page. Kind of surprising. Could have gone either way. I said coming in, I don't really mind either one of these guys winning, but I had convinced myself that Ospreay was winning, that this tournament was his to lose, that it would be him going to the main event in Texas, but I was wrong, and Hangman got his moment, and he's going to get his bigger moment in July. Doesn't mean he's going to win. Because honestly, as time goes on here, I am less and less convinced that the title change is actually going to be happening on that show now that a certain someone is climbing down from the mountain. This may all be for naught, but it was an outstanding main event, match of the year contender between Hangman Page and Will Ospreay to cap off what was an excellent Owen Hart tournament, really on both sides. And they bookended the show tonight with the two Owen Hart finals, because not only is Hangman going to Texas to challenge for the championship, Mercedes Moné and Jamie Hayter were in the finals on the women's side. And to the surprise of absolutely no one, Mercedes Moné will be going to Texas to challenge Timeless Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship, because this woman doesn't have enough belts. She got one more tonight. She's got the Owen Hart belt. Now she gets to go to Texas and she gets another belt. Those two matches are now confirmed for July 12th in Arlington, Texas. And we'll have to wait to see as the rest of the card is fleshed out in the weeks to come. But again, on the whole, this was a very good show. It was way too long, but we talk about this every pay-per-view. I sound like a broken record, so that's all I'm going to say about it. It was too fucking long. But that's the way Tony Khan likes to do things. Yeah, it's a weird thing because on the one side with WWE shows, in a lot of cases, they don't give you enough. And on the AEW side, they tend to give you way too much. Hopefully one of these days we will be able to find a happy medium. Tonight was not one of those nights, unfortunately. But we also had Anarchy in the Arena. Now, this has become a staple of Double or Nothing now for many, many years. And it was an offshoot of the old Stadium Stampede match that, you know, first took place during the COVID era. Anarchy in the Arena is what it says it is. It is anarchy in the arena, and they brawl all over the place, and they have weapons, and they do crazy spots, and it's just pure insanity for 30 minutes, right? That's pretty much what Anarchy in the Arena is. And if that's what you were looking forward to in this match tonight, then you got your money's worth with this year's Anarchy in the Arena, because this was, in my opinion, this was the best one they've done so far. If it wasn't the best one they've done so far, then it's second best to the one where we had zombie Eddie Kingston coming out with the gas can. It's one or the other. It's either 2022 or 2025. But for what Anarchy in the Arena is supposed to be, and I think for what people expect out of a match like this, you got exactly what you were hoping for tonight. You had plenty of violence. You had plenty of blood. You had a little bit of comedy in there. A lot of crazy spots and insanity. Bodies everywhere. Explosions. Staple guns, thumbtacks, tables, everything you could think of, they threw at you in this match. And I thought that match was long. That match went 35 minutes. We still had the main event yet to come at midnight. That went even longer than Anarchy in the Arena. And there was a match in the middle. I feel sorry for those poor bastards who got shoved in between those two matches tonight. But that was those are the highlights, really, of Double or Nothing. The two Owen Hart matches, the Anarchy in the Arena match, which I thought was fun. It's not going to be for everybody. There are people that just are not going to like the format of that match. They're not going to like the music in the background. They're not going to like, you know, just the no-selling and doing all these spots and some of the violence and the gore and stuff. They're just, you know, some people, it's just not their thing. But I think if you are into that kind of stuff, and if you like the violence and you like the insanity, I don't know what these 12 people, and it was actually more than 12 because we had other people interfering. And Prince Nana was out there as well, and he got involved. But these 12 people in the match, I don't know what else they could have given you. I don't know what else they possibly could have done short of killing each other. They gave you everything they possibly could in that match. And when it was over, the baby faces stood tall. So it got a crowd-pleasing finish. Crowd was very much into that match. There really was not a bad match on the show. The matches range from good to very good to great. I can't think of a bad one on the show. Were there matches that did not necessarily need to be on this pay-per-view? Absolutely. There were a handful of them that did not need to be on this show, including that trios match that they had their second to last near the end of the show. When they're sending Paragon out to the ring at 11:25 p.m., that does not need to be on this show. I'm sorry. So yes, there were matches like that that easily could have been cut. They could have been held off for TV this week. But on the whole, it was a quality show. And one of the better Double or Nothings they've done probably in the last few years. Not a bad match to be had. I know it's very late, unless you're on the West Coast. Lucky you. But it is very late, so we're going to get into this here. This is your AEW Double or Nothing 2025 review. It is officially Memorial Day. It is now Monday, May 26, 2025, the first of two shows I'll be doing today. Thank you for joining me here. We are live tonight on YouTube. Do me a favor, hit that subscribe button if you are new here. Hit that like button as well. We're going to try to hit 400 is the minimum goal tonight for us to do our Be the Booker segment. I know it's late. We may not get there, but let's see if we can shoot for 400 likes. Super chats are open. If they come in, I will be reading your messages. I sure do appreciate them, so get them on in, and then we can hang out and talk shop a little bit later on. And before I get into the card here, and yes, I know, David, it's 10 p.m. on the West Coast. I'm aware. That's why I said you're lucky. It was 10 p.m. here as well, about 6 hours ago, or it feels that way. If you missed it, though, just a little FYI, because I was not live on YouTube last night. I was not here, but I did do a Saturday night's main event review, and that is part of episode 914 of the Sound Off, which went up earlier today. So go check out that show. It'll be hitting the YouTube channel tomorrow as well, but go check out the full podcast, over 2 hours long, talking AEW and WWE and lots of other fun stuff, including some pretty wacky stuff, some pretty wild stuff, too, that happened over the course of the week. Somebody mentioned Goldberg in the chat. Yep, talk about Goldberg as well. So they had two matches on the buy-in pre-show. This feels like a lifetime ago. The first match was Harley Cameron and Anna Jay against Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. Now, I had the babyfaces winning here. You know, when I did my predictions on the sound off, I had the babyfaces going over. Megan Bain, she beat Anna Jay on Collision a couple of weeks ago. So it just felt like, you know what? The babyfaces are due for a win here. And Megan doesn't have to be the one to take the losing fall. That's what Penelope Ford is in there for. And that's exactly the way it played out here. Cameron hit a satellite DDT on Megan. Ford hit her Matrix Stunner. And then Anna answered that with a gory bomb. Bane flew in with a wild lariat. And she was showing dominance, but she got low-bridged out of the ring. So Megan Bain went out to the floor. And then in the ring, Harley Cameron hit her finishing move, which is what she calls it, and it was also completely missed by the camera, so we didn't get to see it. But she pins Penelope Ford to win the match. Tony Khan was asked the other day about the possibility of adding women's tag team titles to AEW. I don't even want the women's tag team titles that we have in WWE, because they're pretty much useless. He wants to add tag team titles for the women now in AEW. I think they already have way too many titles. I think the real issue here is the fact that the TBS title and the women's world title, they're currently occupied by Toni Storm and Mercedes Moné. Mercedes Moné has a stranglehold on that TBS championship. She's not losing that championship anytime soon. All the other women now including some of the ones I just mentioned, Meghan Bain and Harley Cameron and Anna Jay and Penelope Ford and Jamie Hayter and Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale and on and on and on and on and on. They have nothing to fight for. They have nothing to fight for. Nothing. So I can actually understand the desire to add women's tag team titles to AEW, even though I really hope they don't do that. But I get it. Because so many of these women, they have nothing to fight for now. I mean, you would think that's what the TBS title would be for, at least. TBS title is parked. It ain't going nowhere for a while. So we may end up with new championships soon enough in AEW. The other match they had here was Trent Beretta, Rocky Romero, Action Andretti, and Leo Rush against Bandido, AR Fox, Hologram, and Commander. This was the spot fest match of the night. Well, I guess outside of Anarchy in the Arena, this is what you would call the spot fest match of the night. I don't know what happened near the end. Action Andretti got his face, his nose, it looked like, maybe the bridge of his nose, busted open. It may have been on an errant elbow from Hologram. Didn't look like anything major, but he came up bloody. He looked a little out of it in the final few minutes here. And it broke down at the end. All the baby faces, they went to the top. They hit all kinds of dives and shooting star presses. Only for near falls, of course. Bandido then hit an assisted 21-plex and got the pin on Andretti to win it for the baby faces. So hopefully he's okay. Hopefully nothing too serious. You know, Chelsea Green supposedly broke her nose on Saturday night's main event last night. So it looks like Action Andretti may have suffered the same fate here. But shockingly, they kept it to two matches on the buy-in. I thought they were going to add two more. We only had two matches on the pre-show, which was fine. And that led into the main card. And the main card opened with our first of two Owen Hart tournament finals matches tonight. This one on the ladies' side. This one with the TBS champion Mercedes Moné going one-on-one for the first time ever. This was a first-time-ever match against Jamie Hayter. And the winner would go on to All In Texas to challenge for the AEW Women's World Championship. So we had dueling chants here at the very beginning of this little feeling out process. Mercedes was focusing on the back, and you knew that would be the story going into this match because Jamie Hayter missed a year and a half, or damn near a year and a half, coming off a very serious back injury. So, and it kind of came up in the build-up to the match. You know, Jamie didn't really want to talk about it or focus on it, but you knew it would be a story that they would tell here. So both women, they were exchanging some leg submission attempts. Hayter got a half crab. Mercedes rolled her to the ropes and hit some charging knees and a meteora. So we fast forward a little bit here. She locks on a surfboard stretch on Jamie and then delivers a side suplex for two. Backstabbers. I mean, again, you could tell just based on the move she was using here, right? There was a clear focus on the lower back. So Hayter made a comeback. She hit a shotgun dropkick, went to the corner. She got her leg swept out. Back of her head smacked the turnbuckle very hard. Mercedes did her little dance, and then she missed a corner meteora as Jamie hit a back suplex before delivering a missile dropkick, then a John Woo dropkick. Mercedes escaped a fireman's carry into the Three Amigos, but she took too long to follow up, which allowed Jamie to cut her off in the corner for a superplex. She held on, though. Mercedes, though, floated over into another backstabber. Jamie avoided a Moné maker with a kick. Mercedes responded with a knee, only for Hayter to fire off a lariat. Both women now were down. And again, dueling chants, fans were really into this match. Primarily, you know, chants for Jamie. She was the clear favorite here, but there were some dueling chants. So they fought to the floor. Hayter stumbled a little bit. She had a little hiccup here because she was trying to do a jump off the steps, but she slipped a little bit and she stumbled. She got enough of a lift to launch herself off into a lariat. Back inside, Mercedes floated over into three backstabbers. The only move she loves more than those meteoras are the backstabbers. And then into the statement maker. Hayter powered out of it. Mercedes wanted an avalanche Moné maker, but Jamie slid out. Mercedes held on, though, and hit a sit-out slam for two. Tried an O'Connor roll. Hayter countered into a rear naked choke. Mercedes rolled through into a two count. Hader tried a springboard lariat, but Mercedes dodged into the statement maker yet again. We had the nearest of near falls here because Hader was able to hit a hate breaker right across the knee. And then a sliding lariat came very, very close, but Mercedes kicked out. Then she dodged a Haterade three different times, wanted a tombstone. Hader floated over, though, hit one of her own, only for a two count. Somehow Mercedes got a shoulder up. She didn't really have a lot behind it. She just kind of flicked her shoulder up, but she did kick out. Jamie wound up for a home run shot. Mercedes spun out, spiked her with a DDT into a cradle and pinned her. This came out of nowhere, but given the way that she spiked her head into the mat, and I hope she didn't, but it sure looked like she did, it looked brutal, and you would think after a spot like that, somebody wouldn't kick out. That's the best thing I could say about that spot. Hopefully she didn't get hurt, and it looked like a finishing move. If I got my head driven into the mat like that, I don't think I'd be getting up. But it wasn't a move that you ordinarily see from Mercedes, so it just felt like it came out of nowhere. And she immediately sprints out of the ring, runs up the ramp, and then collapses down at the trophy. They had the trophy stand. And she just collapses on the floor right in front of the Owen Hart trophy. And then they present her with the Owen Hart belt, and she celebrates her win. They had a hell of a match. I don't think it was better than the match that Mercedes had earlier in the tournament with Athena. I still think that was the best match of the entire tournament. This one was right behind that. And Mercedes, yeah, look, I mean, a lot of people say a lot of things about Mercedes. They say a lot about, oh, she, you know, she has creative control, or she doesn't have creative control, or Mercedes Hogan, you know, brother. And they make all kinds of comments. And look, I think it's ridiculous, her running around with all these different belts and adding more belts now. She's still undefeated, has not eaten a single loss in well over a year now in this company. And they're building her up for something. It's hard for me to see what, or when she does finally lose, if the payoff is going to be worth it, if they're going to make a new star, or what they're going to do here. Because, again, coming into this, my heart said Jamie Hayter. They finally started to build this woman back up to where she was at one point, and after doing nothing with her for many months, because she came back last summer. And up until recently, they hadn't really done a whole hell of a lot with her. So they started to really heat her up again, and I said, okay, there's history between her and Toni Storm. They can harken back to that, you know, for their match in Texas. And Mercedes can defend the TBS title against somebody else. You get two women's championship matches out of it. Even though it was clear they were teasing something with Mercedes and Toni, I thought, well, maybe that's a red herring. They want us to think that's going to be the match. But, you know, you get two matches out of it instead of just one. Nope. Mercedes wins the Owen Hart tournament. She's going to Texas, and they're doing champion against champion for the AEW Women's World Championship. Only that title so far is on the line. They could always change that, and they can make it title for title, but right now it's only the women's world title on the line. And if you really think about it, does it make sense for Toni Storm to beat Mercedes and win the TBS title? It really doesn't. So there's no need for that championship to be on the line, unless, of course, Mercedes is going to win, and she'll retain her title and win the world title. Then I guess it doesn't matter. Otherwise, there's no need for the TBS title to be on the line. We, I think, have a pretty good sense of where this is headed. It's headed exactly where I hoped it was not heading. Because I was still, even a few weeks ago, a month ago, I felt like I was out in the wilderness as somebody who was fairly confident that, look, she's not going to go to Texas and just win again, and they're not just going to put the championship on her when she still has the TBS title. Or they're not just going to call Athena up for one match on TV. Surely there's a plan here to do multiple matches with her and Mercedes, the first of which is in the tournament. But then they could do a second one and maybe a third one, right? And Athena, I think, is from Texas. And so maybe there's a tie in there, like the story sells itself. And then her and Athena had the one match on TV, and Athena got beat, and she continues to be stuck in Ring of Honor hell. And I would like for somebody to explain to me why it's okay for Bandido to be on AEW television, the Ring of Honor world champion. Why is it okay for Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara to not only be on AEW television, but be challenging tonight on this pay-per-view for the AEW tag team titles when they are the Ring of Honor tag team champions. But it's not okay for Athena to be on AEW television outside of that one match that she had, whatever it was, a month ago now, a month and a half ago. I would like somebody to explain that to me. This is nothing new. This has been going on for a while now. So instead of giving us, you know, two great matches instead of one, now they're just putting them together head-to-head, champion against champion. Okay. Not the way I would have done it, but Tony has his vision and this is what he wants. So there's going to be a lot of people very, you know, turned off by the fact Mercedes wins again and she's going all in, but Tony's paying her a lot of money. She's undefeated. She's been positioned as one of the biggest stars in the entire company. He wants her in one of the co-main events on that show. This is one of the co-main events at All In. What Jamie Hayter does now, I have not a fucking clue. I don't have an... You could do Jamie and Megan Bain again. Didn't they do that already? I guess maybe you do something with the two of them. I don't know. I don't know. I truly don't. I don't know where she goes from here. And we'll talk about the Tony match later. Same situation with Mina. Where she goes from here, who the hell knows? Stick them in a match against each other, I guess. I don't know. But this match was very good. I enjoyed this match. Mercedes going to Texas. What the end game is here. If she does win, who knows? I don't know, but I just think it was a real missed opportunity doing it this way instead of having her do something else on that show. Now, on commentary, they brought up Jim Ross at this point. They wished him well after his recent colon cancer diagnosis. I don't know if he's already had surgery. JR said that he was going to be having surgery. So whether it's happened yet or not, they wished him well. I wish him well. He's the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time to do what it is that he does. He's also been hit with a lot of different health challenges, a lot of challenges in general, going back to when his wife, you know, passed away. But a lot of health challenges in recent years. He's not getting any younger. You know, it's scary. You know, it's scary when stuff like that, any cancer diagnosis is scary, but it's a scary situation because it's a lot tougher when you're older and you may have already had health problems. So I'd like to think that, you know, he'll be able to, you know, beat it back and make that triumphant return and do an appearance on commentary, you know, maybe in Texas. Who knows? You know, I'm sure he'll set that goal for himself. I believe this is his 50th year in the wrestling business. It's either this year or next year. I'm almost positive it's this year. And I know he wanted to make it to that 50th anniversary, still doing commentary. So best wishes to him. Hopefully he'll be able to beat this back and make a return at some point. Then it was FTR against Daniel Garcia and Nigel McGuinness. Now, the story here is one that I was not particularly interested in coming into this show. I was not terribly excited or invested in any of this stuff. These are the Collision Cowboys. Most of this story, if not all of it, really has played out on Collision. And then suddenly they were on Dynamite a few weeks ago. And I said, well, I don't really feel anything here watching these guys talk about their issues with each other. But I guess they're going to have a match here on this pay-per-view. And you got FTR in the ring with Daniel Garcia, who's, you know, a very good pro wrestler, and Nigel McGuinness, who doesn't wrestle anymore full-time. He's a commentator, but we know Nigel used to be a great talent in the ring, and so, hey, we get to see Nigel McGuinness in the ring. How bad could it be? The answer is not very bad, right? This was not going to be a bad match. It's just not a match that I cared about. Also, no Oasis theme for Nigel like he had it All In last year. So Dax Harwood demanded that McGuinness tag in. Garcia obliged. Nigel was looking pretty good early in the match until he crashed and burned on the outside. Wheeler saved his partner from a Tower of London and sent McGuinness repeatedly into the announce desk right in front of Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone has been a part of this story because FTR was very unhappy about comments he had made about them and how Nigel got roped into this as he stood up for Tony one week. That's how he ended up being involved in this whole story. So, you know, FTR doesn't like Schiavone. They're always yelling at him and bullying him. And so they were doing more of the same here. So they got the heat on Nigel for a while until he finally was able to make that comeback. Garcia made the hot tag, ran wild. He got the Dragon Tamer applied. Wheeler took Garcia's head off with a lariat, and then he saved his partner from a shatter machine, but both tried a comeback lariat. They collided with each other. We got a Dragon Tamer London Dungeon combo applied. Stokely Hathaway, though, made enough of a save that Matt Menard then cut him off. Matt Menard, of course, he's like an uncle to Daniel Garcia. Stokely Hathaway, he's the new manager, the new agent, whatever you want to call him for FTR. So they were out there. I should point that out. McGinnis brought Wheeler over to Tony Schiavone in a headlock, and he forced him to apologize to Tony. So he apologized to Mr. Schiavone. And then after that, Wheeler went back over after he recovered. He went back over and said his fingers were crossed, and he wasn't sorry. He wasn't sorry about shit to Schiavone. Garcia hit two superplexes on Harwood back inside. Wheeler saved his partner from a third one, drove McGinnis off the apron. So we skip ahead a little bit here, and Schiavone left the commentary booth to go check on Nigel at one point, because he doesn't give a shit. He's not cowering from these men. He's not intimidated by these men. He gets up from commentary. He goes over to, and they're right in his face. And Tony doesn't care. You know, he's just standing there, but he's checking on Nigel to make sure that, you know, he's okay. Garcia, though, was left 2-on-1 in the ring all by himself. And he was fighting back initially, but then he got overwhelmed. He got dropped by pile driver. Spike pile driver also connects. Garcia, though, gets his foot on the ropes for the break. Dax applied a sharpshooter. And Matt Menard gets up on the apron. Wheeler drops him with a right hand. And then he hits this tope so fast that the momentum, it's like a Darby Allin suicide dive, where he hit top speed and the momentum carried him into the barricade. And he smacked the barricade hard. And he was holding the side of his head. But then he went and took out McGinnis when McGinnis was struggling to try to climb back into the ring. Eventually, Garcia had nowhere to go. He did not give up. He passed out from the pain, and FTR picks up the win. They gave this 22 minutes, and this is the problem. This is the problem. Now, when you have a show like this, and I want to say it was 11, maybe it was 10. I think it was 11 matches total, at least 9 of which were on the main card. But you give a match like this 22 minutes, when you've got 35 allotted for, or thereabout allotted for Anarchy in the Arena and 37 for the main event, like the key matches on the show, the two Owen matches, Anarchy in the Arena, there was a tag team title match, there was a women's world championship match. Like, I get it. Like, certain matches are going to get more time than others. Why did this match need 22 minutes when this show was going to almost 12:30 in the morning? Burnout is a real thing. I know the sickos, they love pro wrestling. They can't get enough of it, but you can get too much of a good thing in one shot, in one night. This match did not need to go 22 minutes. It was a good match, but it didn't need to be 22 minutes long. They told a story, though, with Nigel trying to help Garcia, but he couldn't make the save. Garcia refused to give up, and he passed out. So even though I didn't care for the story, this was a needed win for FTR because, again, they just turned heel not that long ago. They have a manager now. Clearly, they're building them up to eventually challenge for, if not win back, the tag team titles. There was no reason for them to lose this match. So, a fairly predictable finish here. And then right from one match, on to the next. This one with Ricochet against Mark Briscoe in what they build as a stretcher match. They build this as a stretcher match. The object, though, was to get your opponent onto the stretcher, but get them in the back of an ambulance that they drove into the back of the arena and slammed the door shut. So it really wasn't a stretcher match. It was an ambulance match. I mean, I know we're kind of picking nits here, but that's really what it was. Briscoe got attacked at the bell. He quickly turned the tide. He dragged Ricochet over to the ambulance. He almost placed him on the stretcher. Ricochet, though, ran like a cartoon character. I mean, arms going like that. He runs like a cartoon character all the way down the ramp back to the ring and slides into the ring to get as far away from that ambulance as possible. So Briscoe drove a stretcher into his ribs. He placed Ricochet onto the stretcher, and he teased doing a Cactus Jack elbow off the apron onto the stretcher. I say teased because Ricochet dodged it. Briscoe got set up on the stretcher himself. Ricochet then tried a shooting star off the apron, but he crashed and burned onto the stretcher. Briscoe successfully hit the cactus elbow second time around off the apron and then again off the barricade. I know some people were still asking, why was this even a stretcher match? I've mentioned this many times. It is an homage to a stretcher match between Sabu and RVD in ECW that Tony Khan was present for in the crowd at the ECW arena. So there's your answer. I know it feels kind of random, but there you go. So Briscoe pulled out a bucket under the ring, a bucket full of cleaning supplies. And he, in the ring, he takes Ricochet, he hooks him into a headlock, and he takes one of the bottles, I don't know what it was, could have been Mr. Clean, and he starts spraying the top of Ricochet's bald head with it. So now his bald head is glistening. And he took a rag and he's, you know, wiping off his head. And they're joking on commentary about how shiny. Don't look directly into it. You might be blinded. Some bald humor here from the commentators. Ricochet got walloped in the head with the bucket. That knocked him to the floor. Briscoe then did the Sabu pose. He went for a triple jump. There again, right? Another Sabu tie-in. He went for a triple jump. Ricochet, though, launched a chair right into his face. And Briscoe battled back with an exploder. Ricochet, though, got the cleaning solution, the spray, and he misted him in the face with it, right in the eyes. Briscoe ended up busted open badly. I didn't see how it happened. Maybe the chair to the head. But he got busted open. And he was, I just mentioned a bucket. He was bleeding buckets. This was not like a little cut. He was wearing the crimson mask, just blood pouring all over the place like a faucet. Ricochet pushed Briscoe onto the stretcher and back to the ambulance. He almost loaded him inside. Briscoe, though, had a, I guess he found a crutch in there, and he sticks the crutch through the doors. So when Ricochet went to go close the doors, they wouldn't close because there was a crutch. So that's how he saved himself. Then he sprayed Ricochet with a fire extinguisher and he brought him back to the ring. So he, again, Briscoe's bleeding everywhere. And he hits a J-driller. Then he sets the table up at ringside. He delivers a huge froggy bow off the top through the table. Briscoe wanted another J-driller in the aisle, but Ricochet got a backdrop. And Briscoe recovered first. He was in hot pursuit. Ricochet, though, stabbed him in the head with the golden scissors. And he tried again. Briscoe, though, got a thrush chop. He got possession of the scissors. Ricochet went to the ambulance where he had a second pair of scissors. And he stabbed Briscoe in the head again, which he no-sold initially, so Briscoe got kicked in the dick. He pulled a John Cena, did Ricochet. Then came a third scissor shot, then the spirit gun connects. He loads Briscoe into the back of the ambulance, and he slams the door shut to win the match. To win this ambulance match, which is really what this was. You know, with Anarchy in the Arena later in the show, and frankly, this match hardly being any kind of deeply personal feud that really warranted this much blood, I don't know why we had Mark Briscoe bleeding the way that he bled here. I mean, this was kind of ridiculous. It didn't feel like it was really necessary. I mean, he was out there looking like fucking Onita in FMW. And of course, in Anarchy in the Arena later, we had people bleeding, which, not like this, though. But we had blood and violence and all kinds of weapons and stuff. So I'm not sure why all of that was needed here, but it was entertaining. You know, for what it was entertaining. I'm entertained by Ricochet's antics in a lot of these matches. I think that his work as a heel is just so much better than anything he would be doing right now as a babyface. It's not even funny. So, I mean, it was entertaining enough. Ricochet needed this win. He needed this win. That was his first win on an AEW pay-per-view since joining the company in 7 matches. He was 0-6 coming into this show, so he was overdue for a win. We had the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley and Benjamin Shelton, against Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara, the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. This was for the AEW Tag Team Champions. Tag Team Championships, I should say. MJF was ringside. He was out there with his new crew. MVP did commentary. So the crowd was, this was as loud as the crowd had been for probably the entire night up to this point. And they were chanting, you know, we hurt people. We hurt people. For the supposed heels, by the way. The Hurt Syndicate are supposed to be the bad guys here. But they hurt people. So the fans liked them. Dustin was almost immediately worked over in the corner. Sammy tagged in. Benjamin, though, took him to Suplex City. And then he tagged in Bobby. Guevara dodged a spear into a pump knee, and then he avoided a charge in the corner, only to run into a huge spinebuster. Lashley caught a Sammy float over from a power slam position, and it's weird because he had him on his shoulder, and he just kind of threw him up a little bit and spun him over, and then he hit a Dominator. Benjamin tagged in, tried to pop up. Guevara, though, countered into a cutter. Dustin made the tag, cleaned house. Snap, power slam, code red on Benjamin for two count. Dustin wanted his unnatural kick as MJF took the referee, which allowed Dustin to hit the low kick and get a near fall out of it. So that was a bit of a fuck up there by MJF because he ended up costing his partner in that situation. The opposite of what he intended or what we think he intended to do. Dustin hit a crossroads while Sammy took out Lashley with a shooting star off the post to the floor. MJF again gets up on the apron. And now he's going to try to hand Shelton Benjamin the Dynamite Diamond ring. He says, this is taking too long. Here, use the ring. And it looks like Benjamin is considering using the ring, but then Bobby Lashley comes over. And he puts a stop to that. He would not let Shelton accept it. So he says no. Guevara tried a springboard cutter on Lashley, who sidestepped it, hit a huge spear. Dustin, though, made the save. MVP took the referee now. Okay, so now the referee is distracted by him. And MJF tried to use the ring himself. They're on the outside of the ring now, on the opposite side. And he's going to use the ring, right? He's going to try to do good for the Hurt Syndicate. He wants to help out his boys. Lashley, though, comes over. And Lashley is not going to have any of this. And it looks like Bobby Lashley might be about to beat the hell out of this guy. All of a sudden, he smiles. He flashes a smile, and then he turns back around, and he charges, and he spears Dustin Rhodes through the barricade into the crowd. So then MJF and Lashley, they share a hug, and as they're sharing a hug on the outside of the ring in a tender moment, Sammy Guevara wanted to dive out onto both. He got very narrowly cut off as he hit the ropes, barely got cut off by Shelton Benjamin, who followed with the step-up knee in the corner, back on the inside, and a thrust kick for the win. So are we to then assume that the tension here between MJF and Lashley was all just a swerve? Just for the sake of doing a swerve? I mean, Lashley, there was nothing that Lashley did here that he couldn't have done in the absence of this dumb swerve that they did here. Yeah, I mean, it all just felt kind of pointless to me, if that's what it was supposed to be. The outcome was never in doubt here. I mean, the action was solid. It was fine. I wasn't like a huge fan of this or anything. I like seeing the Hurt Syndicate. The match was really nothing special. I mean, look, nothing to really make it stand out from any of the other Hurt Syndicate matches other than the fact that they were far more competitive than most of their opponents typically are. But other than that, nothing special about this. We had Kazuchika Okada defending the Continental Championship against Speedball Mike Bailey. Okada answered a charging Bailey in the corner with an air raid crash on the knee. And then the top rope elbow that led to the Rainmaker flip-off pose. Bailey almost stole it, though, off a roll-up. He reached up and pulled him down and rolled him up for a two. So Bailey lit him up with kicks. He went to the top for a shooting star press. Okada, though, gets the knees up. Later on, going up into the corner, Bailey wanted his ultimate weapon finish, but Okada drop-kicked him off the ropes. He fell, he hit the apron on the way down, crashed to the floor. Bailey avoided an apron tombstone after this. He swept the legs. He hit his jumping moonsault into the double knees, right onto Okada's guts on the apron. Back inside, he missed the ultimate weapon. Okada hit a shotgun dropkick. Bailey attempted a time adventure, which is his 540 spinning hook kick. Okada, though, dropkicked him, so that put an end to that. Okada went for a rainmaker. Bailey finally hit the time adventure, only for Okada then to get his hands on the bottom rope on the pin attempt, even though Rick Knox counted three, because it's Rick Knox. This was, it was pretty obvious that he got his hand on the rope before the three count. It wasn't like, because in a situation like this where the referee will count three and then be like, oh, no, no, and they'll backtrack. You know, when it's that close in a lot of cases, you know, you'll have the fans chanting, you fucked up, or ref, you suck. And nobody chanted that here because they saw that Okada clearly got his hand on the bottom rope. So Bailey brought Okada up by the wrist. He fired off some kicks. Okada, though, answered with a series of lariats. He went for a rainmaker. Bailey wrapped him up in a straitjacket pin, got a close near fall out of that. Bailey went for the ultimate weapon yet again. Okada, though, managed to dropkick him out of midair as he was coming off the top rope, which was awesome. And then he hit a rainmaker to retain the title in a fantastic closing sequence. This was the most predictable match on the entire card. Of every single match, pre-show or main card that they announced, this one right here, as far as the outcome, was easily the most predictable. And the first half was nothing out of the ordinary, but in the second half, we got as close to New Japan Okada as you could ask for. He kind of creeps out every now and then. He lies dormant most of the time. But every now and then he shows his face just to show you and remind you that he's still in there. He's still there. And that's closer to the Okada that we got here in the second half. And when he does show up, boy, oh boy, it's usually a lot of fun. Those last few minutes of the match were a lot of fun. And they even got the fans to bite on one or two near falls when they had absolutely no business biting on any near fall that was going to go Bailey's way here, because it was very clear that Okada was not losing this championship. Okada's path is clear. His path is as clear as anyone else's. He's going to Texas. He's going to wrestle Kenny Omega. And it will likely be champion against champion, title for title. Which is one of the reasons why I was hoping they wouldn't do that on the women's side. You know, it may not be title for title, but again, champion against champion. Because right now it looks like we're going to get that twice on that show. I mean, they were teasing Omega Okada for this show months ago. I mean, with the banner in the background, this is not rocket science here. We all know where this is headed. So any title match that he has, or even Omega, and I'm going to talk about Omega in a little bit because he's going to be defending his international title soon. But any matches, title matches that these guys have between now and July 12th, it's just a foregone conclusion. You know, they're just filling time is basically what they're doing here. So even though this was the most predictable match on the show, this ended up being one of the more enjoyable matches of the night. Not the best match of the night, but it's up there in the conversation in top three or four matches on this show. Let me welcome everybody who is joining me here very late on a late Sunday night, early Monday morning, headed towards 2 o'clock in the morning. I appreciate you guys sticking with me here for your Double or Nothing 2025 review. We're going to talk about the Women's World Championship match now. It was Timeless Toni Storm, speaking of predictable matches, defending her title against Mina Shirakawa, who pinned her in a four-way eliminator match over a week ago on Dynamite. This was another match here with dueling chants to kick things off. Mina zoned in on the leg that she targeted last Wednesday night. She tried a figure four leg lock around the post. Toni, though, pulled her face first into the post. Later on, outside, Luther was tending to Toni when Mina booted him. And Mina then managed an impressive tornillo off of Luther's back onto Toni, before wiping out Luther with a dive off the top. That distraction allowed Toni to recover enough to hit a DDT on the floor. Mina, though, got another dragon screw back in the ring. Figure four finally was applied, but Storm quickly rolled to the ropes. And Toni threw a desperation headbutt. Mina fired off a back fist. Both women collapsed. Storm went for sweet cheek music, but her leg gave out, and there was a glamorous driver from Mina that connected and looked really good, but Tony kicked out. Storm kicked free of a figure four, hit sweet cheek music, but could not get Storm Zero. Mina rolled through sky high into the figure four yet again. You could tell here, she keeps going back to the well. That didn't work. Tony got the ropes. Mina went back to it again. Storm hooked a big package and they traded pin attempts until Tony gets up. She hits a headbutt and a quick Storm Zero and she pins her to retain the championship. That came out of nowhere. After the match was over, Tony helped Mina up and the two of them shared a passionate kiss. Because why not? Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa sharing a kiss here in the middle of the ring. I don't think you're going to get too many complaints about that. It's good sportsmanship. That's what it is. They had a strong match here. This was not my favorite Tony Storm match that she's had, but I liked it. Thought it was good. The story was Mina focusing on Tony's leg as she was doing on TV last week. And just the repeated attempts to go for the figure four and try again and go for the figure four again. And in the end, it proved to be her undoing. But we had the same issue here that we had earlier where, and in the Okada match even that I just talked about, where there was no real drama over the outcome. And as is the case with Jamie Hayter from earlier, the question of where to now from Mina Shirakawa. You know, she signed full-time for AEW, so she's in. You know, Mina is in now. She's full-time on the roster. And in her very first match back on television, she wins a four-way and pins the world champion to earn a title match on this pay-per-view. And it's like, unless they're going to put the title on her, which they very clearly were not going to do, I don't see why there was such a rush to do this match now. Why did we need to rush into Tony and Mina? Mina just debuted as a full-time member of the roster. So now, of course, she's been beaten. And she didn't look too bothered by it, right? The big kiss when the match was over. And not only that, she got down on her knees and she was kissing Tony on, like, the knee pad and stuff. She was showing respect to Tony Storm here. But, you know, again, as far as where things go now with Mina, where things go now with Jamie Hayter, I don't know. Truly, I don't know. And that's the problem. You know, Megan Bain got a title match pretty quickly as well. You know, Megan Bain was pushed very hard and she was pushed very strong. And not as quickly as Mina, but relatively quickly into a championship match that was back at Dynasty against Tony. And she didn't win. And they've tried to keep her strong still on TV, but I'm just questioning what the direction is for someone like her. Maybe it is women's tag team titles. Maybe it's her and Penelope Ford as a team, and they introduce new titles and they win the titles because the TBS title is all wrapped up right now. She already lost challenging for the other belt. This is the issue with a lot of the women in the division now. They're in this stasis. They're just in this state of, I don't know, suspended animation where they don't really have anything to fight for at the moment. And it could be hard to develop stories when there's no attainable goal. Like, what is the goal? What is the point? What are they challenging for? I don't know. They have to figure that out. They have to give people a reason to care or just come up with compelling stories in the absence of those championships. Give us a reason to care about what these women are doing. That's going to be the challenge for Tony Khan going forward. We'll see as far as what happens in Texas. Texas is still 6 weeks away. That's a long time, though, for those titles to be occupied and for these other women to not really have a whole hell of a lot to do. I don't know why they rush Mina in this spot, but it is what it is. There's nowhere for her to go now but down. When you start here, the ceiling is here. When you start here, the only way to go is down. That's it. But then it was time for Anarchy in the Arena. Yes. Anarchy in the... You know what? We gotta give a siren for this. Anarchy in the Arena, everybody. Loud enough for you? All you people at 2 o'clock in the morning, dozing off. I just woke them up. Probably had a few people shit themselves, but you got to wake up. It's Anarchy in the Arena time. John Moxley, Claudio, Wheeler Yuta, Marina Shafir, and the Young Bucks taking on Swerve Strickland, Kenny Omega, Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata, and Willow Nightingale. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. Do me a favor, close your eyes. Now I want you to imagine what you'll look like in 6 months. More importantly, what your hair is going to look like 6 months from now. Now picture your hair if you started using Hims. Imagine yourself with thicker, fuller hair. That's what I like to call the Hims effect. Think of all the things you could do in 6 months. If you're a wrestler, you could break your leg and spend 6 months rehabbing to get back, but that's no fun. You could find some new hobbies, but you may end up quitting on them if you're not very good at them. I mean, hell, you could go on a bunch of dates and end up in a relationship that's already over in 6 months. Relationships come and go, after all, but your hair is the last thing you want to see come and go. But with Hims, you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth in just 3 to 6 months. Guys, life just seems to get busier and busier. It's easy to feel like you don't even have time to try, but you should try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through hoops and get access right away to treatment without ever leaving your home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits, no waiting rooms. This all takes the stress out of the process. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. And if prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/solomonster. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Do the review with music. You know what? I probably should. I can't play the music they played, though. They play fucking Drowning Pool. They play the Pointer Sisters. I can't do that. You know what, though? I'll tell you what, though. You know what I have? I still have this. We could do the match with this. We'll alternate here. This is gonna get old very quick, much like Drowning Pool did. Yes, we had Anarchy in the Arena. Now Swerve Strickland was the first one out. He was in Predator gear and he had the mask and everything. And they said that he was here to go buck hunting, is what they said. Willow Nightingale was out next. Then Hobbs and Shibata entered together. It's very late. It would have been more entertaining if Hobbs and Shaw would have come out. No, it was Hobbs and Shibata. They entered together, but there was no Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe was conspicuous by his absence here. Hobbs is also, I should point out, wearing a sleeveless shirt that said Big, Black, and Jacked. No argument here. Omega was out last. Still no Samoa Joe. So then the Death Riders were shown backstage, and they split off in opposite directions. So they enter through different parts of the arena. Justin Roberts, he read a prepared statement. Did Justin Roberts from the like the Gettysburg Address, a prepared statement here for the Young Bucks entrance as they enter dressed like the Founding Fathers, because you see they are the Founding Fathers of AEW. Swerve and Omega, they were having none of this shit. They left the ring, they attacked the Bucks on the ramp, and they cut to the crowd to show Samoa Joe sneaking up behind Claudio and putting him in a choke. And for the first few minutes, they kept that music playing that the Young Bucks came out to. They came out to that Revolutionary War era flute tune. I don't know. The name escapes me. Whatever the hell it is. So we had four different split screens going on. They didn't keep it consistently, but at different points, they would cut to like four different split screens of action all over the building. It is simply not possible for me to sit here and recite everything that these men did and women did in this match. It is an impossibility, but I will try to hit the high notes for you. So after some more of the flute music, Omega got on the microphone and he cut that shit off before they started playing "I'm So Excited" by the Pointer Sisters, because Tony Khan is going to get his money's worth for that music. Remember, this was supposed to be the new opening theme song for Dynamite at the beginning of the year. It was the new opening music for Dynamite for all of 1 week before Tony got bullied into changing it because people online didn't like it and they made fun of him for it. What are you using the Pointer Sisters for? That's a fucking 40-year-old song. So he used it once and we never heard it again. And he said, you know what? I have the rights to it. I'm going to use this fucking song. So they played the Pointer Sisters. After a little bit of that, Omega said, okay, that's enough of that. He said, how about some early 2000s alternative rock? Play that shit. And they played "Let the Bodies Hit the Floor" by Drowning Pool, which I have not heard in quite some time. I will never not think about the Alliance. Whenever I hear that music, the first thing I think of is the Alliance from the Invasion era. I think of Stephanie McMahon in her ECW beret coming out every week. She looked great, by the way, in that fucking beret. But that's the first thing I think of now. That and SummerSlam, right? Because wasn't that the song for SummerSlam in 2001? I think that might have been. It's a great song. It fit this match perfectly. And it sounded great the first two or three times. But it kept looping. And legitimately, four times, five times, it kept playing over and over and over again. And it's not like this great music that you hear right now, which is, I mean, this is timeless here. I could listen to this all night. This is great. But they played Drowning Pool for quite some time. It did fit the match, though. And like all the chaos and everything that ensued, even the crowd, they started singing the song. So Moxley stabbed Hobbs in the head with, I think it was a pen, and he opened him up. Omega then very politely asked the fan by the balcony for his seat so that he could jump off of it. Wheeler Yuta, though, cut him off before he could do it. And he teased a superplex off the balcony when Hobbs appeared, and he chucked Yuta off the balcony onto the pile of security geeks down below. Omega then used Hobbs as a launch pad off the balcony with a moonsault. And the place was just going nuts for this. Willow Nightingale and Marina Shafir, they brawled into the parking lot where Willow threw bottles at Shafir, busting one on her head and slamming her on a table. Shibata and Yuta, they spilled out close by. Shibata tossed them in a trash can. It was like a trash can or a bin, I forgot. But he rolled him repeatedly into a garage door. Strickland leapt off the stage at Claudio, who hit an uppercut out of midair before delivering a giant swing into a speaker. And when he did that, that cut the music off. So evidently, throwing this man into this one lone speaker that was right next to the stage was enough to cut the music off. So we'll do the same here, because that's where the music ended here in this match. But I'm serious, like, they looped that Drowning Pool song about five times, to the point where even Taz was like joking and begging on commentary for them to stop. So Hobbs sprinted in. He pounced Claudio near a stack of equipment cases that was right by the stage. And then Matt Jackson jumped off the stage and he hit a dive. Willow and Marina, who was now bleeding, maybe from that bottle shot earlier. They spilled back down the ramp. Marina hits a judo throw, actually several of them, and then wraps a chain around a ring post and puts it through Willow's pierced ear. with a deadbolt lock through it, which was quite the visual here. Back in the ring, Omega wanted a Terminator dive. Nick Jackson cut him off with a super kick. Kenny was hung up over the top rope. And they did this spot where Nick Jackson did a double stomp. And Omega, he flew to the floor through a table down below. Matt Jackson was out there. And he kind of caught him on the way down into a powerbomb through the table. So it was a great spot, but it looked great because Omega, again, he's hanging over the top rope by, you know, his guts, right? He's just hanging there. And when Nick came off the ropes and stomped him or whatever he did, the best way I could describe it is Omega took like a classic Ted DiBiase bump. If you remember, now, if you know, you know. DiBiase was great because when he would get clotheslined out of the ring, sometimes, if he was hanging over the top rope, stomach first, he would use the momentum of the ropes to propel his body up into the air and make the bump look so much more exaggerated. Because he rarely did he just get clotheslined normally out of the ring. Sometimes he did. But I always called that the DiBiase bump because I never saw anybody else do that. That's what Kenny did here. So he kind of propelled himself up into the air and then fell, and he caught him in a powerbomb, and the whole spot just looked great. So Hobbs was brought up to the top of the stage where Nick sprinted off one of the big screens with a swanton through a table. Hobbs, though, came back. He fought off a 3-on-1 attack initially. But as the Bucks signaled for an EVP trigger, Prince Nana all of a sudden is driving Swerve Strickland out from the back alongside the stage on a forklift. And Swerve does a swerve stomp off the little platform onto the Bucks. Nana also had a key, so he went down to the ring and he finally freed Willow and her ear from the ring post. Oh my God, somebody says they should have played American Made. I thought you said American Males. In the middle of this match, they should have just looped American Males over and over again. I think my ears would bleed. Actually, they should have played Bailey's Deaf Rebel theme over and over again. Role model. At some point, either the heels or the baby faces would just verbally submit, and that would have been the end of the match. So Marina and Claudio, they tried chair shots to Hobbs' back. He no-sold them, and that led to a double spine buster, with Willow delivering the other spine buster to Marina. Then she ripped off her shirt, Willow did, to reveal a shirt underneath, much like the one Hobbs was wearing, that also said, Big, Black, and Jacked, which was kind of funny. And then we got a four-way rear naked choke. Strickland and Matt Jackson, they went up top and hit stereo 450 splashes to break up the chokes from Moxley and Samoa Joe. Nick brought out a staple gun at this point, and he stapled Hobbs. And Hobbs just looked at him and laughed. Like he didn't give a shit. And Excalibur said, this man has been shot before. You think he gives a shit about taking a staple gun? Which is a fair point. I mean, if you've been shot, if you've been stabbed, something like this probably doesn't really make you flinch. Matt Jackson got another staple gun, but Strickland stapled him in the dick with it. That was not even the worst of it. Marina got a staple gun, and she stapled Swerve's tongue with it. And I'm watching this, and I'm just thinking, why? Yeah, I went back to All Out in the cage match with Swerve and Hangman in the hypodermic needle spot to the cheek, the inside of the cheek, which Swerve also took. Why? This was even worse, honestly. A fucking, like, just the idea of it. Like, why would you even think of something like that? Oh, yeah, I'll volunteer for that. You got to be a special kind of sick to do something like that. Why would you ever let somebody do that? And it really, again, it's one of those things that's just there for shock value. It played no role in the match whatsoever. It's like the needle spot. We had a whole discussion about this last September. It served no purpose. It was there strictly for shock value. Nothing more, nothing less. It's like, look how tough I am. I can get my tongue stapled. Okay. congratulations. I could go outside and stand in front of a bus and get hit by a bus. Doesn't make me impressive. It just makes me an idiot. So Willow sprinted in and hit spears on everybody in her path, male and female, until Moxley flew in and took her out with a cutter. Omega was in with snapdragons all around, even to Marina Shafir. Super kick party from the Bucks. Prince Nana took some kicks. Rick Knox took some kicks. Maybe it'll knock some sense into him. Free tongue piercing, says Rose Gold. That's one way. It's one way to look at it. I hope he's up on his tetanus shots. Yes, I hope so too. Darby Allin got hit by a bus in New York City. That's true. And he shook it off and went about his day. That's right. I forgot about that. Darby got, but that's Darby though. I mean, it's, you kind of expect that. Darby got hit by a bus and then he went on to climb to the top of Mount Everest. That's why they're going to put the AEW World Championship on him in a few months. So anyway, Nightingale took one as well. The super kick party. The Bucks wanted a TK driver. Swerve Strickland, though, shoved Nick Jackson off the top rope, and there just so happened to be a table down below, and so Nick went through the table. Willow turned the tables on Matt Jackson, got him up for a TK driver, so she has him now in like a tombstone position. And Swerve comes off the top rope. They complete the move, only for a close two count. Fans are losing their minds. Claudio was about to go after Samoa Joe with a chair when somebody, cloaked in an orange hoodie, comes out to the ring and pops Claudio with what I believe was a golf club. And it was Hook. And Joe looked happy to see him and was kind of motioning for him to come into the ring. And Hook just shook his head no, like he was disappointed. And he walked to the back. So there is some drama there now. You know, I said when Hook comes back, I thought maybe he would cost Joe the cage match when he challenged Moxley for the title a few weeks ago. Or maybe he would even get involved here, but it would go against the babyfaces. So he helped the babyfaces, but he was very disappointed. And so that it looks like they are going to do that story where maybe he is feeling shafted. You know, he's feeling left out because now Hobbs is one third of the trio's champions. He's in the ops. What about me? It looks like we may be in for a story like that with Hook. But yeah, Hook left and we didn't see him again after that. Moxley was locked in the coquina clutch by Samoa Joe until Gabe Kidd showed up. He had the briefcase. He used it as a weapon to break up the choke. And he took out Omega with a pile driver. The Bucks were about to do an EVP trigger, but Yuta grabbed a fistful of thumbtacks. Said, wait. Grabs the thumbtacks, shoves them in Kenny Omega's mouth. Then they hit the EVP trigger. Giant swing from Claudio into a dropkick by Yuta. Moxley slaps on the bulldog choke. It looks like this could potentially be the end here, but then Samoa Joe makes the save. The numbers, though, were too much. They all bring Joe over to where the ambulance was still parked in the back of the arena from the match earlier. When all of a sudden, Mark Briscoe reappears. He was on the losing end of that match earlier. Mark Briscoe reappears, still covered in dried blood. And he does a flip dive off the stage onto the pile, and he brawls with Gabe Kidd. Everybody in the match now brawls into the ambulance until it's only the Death Riders and Gabe Kidd trapped in the back of the ambulance. So the babyfaces now were standing there. Willow Nightingale is there. Powerhouse Hobbs is there. They're standing by the doors, like right in front of the ambulance, and they're blocking them from getting out. So the Death Riders are trapped, and Gabe Kidd is trapped. And the Young Bucks are all alone in the ring. There are no Death Riders to save them. And they turn around and they realize, oh shit, we're alone in the ring now with Kenny Omega and with Swerve Strickland, who hit a V-trigger house call combo. Prince Nana provides some thumbtack-covered sneakers to Swerve. Omega hits a one-winged angel on Matt Jackson off the stage. He takes him to the stage, hits a one-winged angel off the stage through a table that explodes. Why did the table explode? I have no idea. It just did. Why ask silly questions like that? Of course it would explode. Back in the ring, Strickland hit a swerve stomp with the tack-covered shoes onto Nick Jackson to finally end the match 35 minutes in. Strickland looked into the camera. He stuck his tongue out to show you. He was so proud of this. He stuck his tongue out, and you could see the staple right in the middle of his tongue. I don't even want to know how they remove it. I guess with a staple remover. I don't even want to think about it. It gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. I don't do well with that stuff. But the baby faces stand tall, as I figured they would, just based on the way they went off the air on Dynamite on Wednesday. I had them picked to win this match here. And also, the baby faces needed a big win. Let's face it, okay? They were due for a big win. We have been stuck in Death Rider's hell for months on end. And yeah, I know Texas is still 5 or 6 weeks away, and maybe they'll get the big win on that show. Maybe they won't. But they needed a big win here. That's what the fans wanted to see. And you could only get the heat so often before you turn people off. So I was happy that it went the way of the baby faces. It made for a better finish and a far more enjoyable ending here, you know, to this match. I mean, where do I even begin with this here? Like, if this wasn't the best Anarchy in the Arena ever, and I think it probably was, but if it wasn't, then I would be inclined to go with 2022, which is the one where Eddie Kingston came back out. He looked like a fucking undead zombie. He had the gas can. It was the Jericho Appreciation Society. I think it was against Moxley, Danielson. Kingston. I forgot all the other baby faces in the match. That one was a lot of fun. Yeah, that one was very enjoyable. But so was this one. And they shoved so much in there. And the music and just the, you know, all kinds of wacky stunts and spots. And they were brawling in the back in the parking lot area and all over the building, which I enjoy, you know, when they use the full arena. So you got a little bit of everything here, just sheer insanity. If you wanted blood and violence, you got it. If you wanted a little bit of humor and comedy, they had some, you know, lighthearted moments like that in there as well. Crowd-pleasing ending with the baby faces winning. If I had to use a word to describe this, it was fun. It was longer than it needed to be. It did not need to be 35 minutes long. I think this match would have benefited by shaving off anywhere from 7 to 10 minutes. Maybe a little under 10 minutes. I think it would have made a big difference. It would have made the match even more enjoyable just to tighten things up a little bit. Did I enjoy everything they did here? No. No, I didn't. And it definitely went longer than it needed to, but the match is called Anarchy in the Arena. I mean, you know what you're getting before the bell even rings. Like, it's in the name of the match. What did they give you here? They gave you anarchy. It was 35 minutes of just pure chaos. Brawling everywhere, no selling, going from spot to spot, big dives and all kinds of violence and shit. That's what the match is supposed to be. It's supposed to be like a giant, over-the-top movie fight scene. And to that end, I thought that they delivered a very fun match that was never boring. Was it ridiculous? Yes. It was never boring. I was entertained. And that's all I asked for. So kudos to everybody involved here. I thought that they did as good of a job as you could possibly ask for. I don't know what else these people could have done. This was the first time we had female involvement in Anarchy in the Arena, and I thought Marina Shafir and Willow Nightingale, they just blended right in with the guys. You know, they didn't detract from the match or anything like that. They fit like a glove. You know, when they added the women to the match, I said, great, something different. It could be fun. And that's what the match was. I thought it was fun. Primo. That is definitely not fun, but it is Alex with the $25 Brie mode. They should have played Brie mode, he says. I think they would have had a cease and desist from Nick Khan. Did they do blood and guts yet? No. And I hope they don't. Not yet. You know, if they do blood and guts before Texas, which they might, you know, because if the Death Riders do lose it all in, that could be the beginning of the end for the Death Riders. I mean, they're not just going to end in one night, but I don't know. I would think that if they're going to do it, they would probably want to do it when the Death Riders are still relatively strong. But to turn around in like 3 or 4 weeks and do a blood and guts match after you just did something like Anarchy in the Arena, it's overkill. If you're going to do it, wait a few months. You know, why do it now? So after 35 minutes of the previous match and 20 after 11 here on the East Coast, we still were not even at the main event yet. We still had another match to go before we even got to the men's Owen Hart final. We had a trios match. And we had Paragon, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong taking on Kyle Fletcher, Konosuke Takeshita, and Josh Alexander. Not a very desirable spot for these men to be in, having to follow what I just talked about. But that was the card that was dealt to them, and so they went out there and they did their best. The match broke down. O'Reilly saved Cole from a Kyle Fletcher brainbuster attempt until Fletcher dodged a high kick. He tried a powerbomb. O'Reilly floated through into a guillotine. This left Kyle as basically an open target here, and Takeshita popped him with a hard right hand that led to Kyle Fletcher powering him up into the brainbuster for the win. After the match, Lance Archer and Roppongi Vice, they joined the crew here because they're all part of the Callis family. And actually, you know, I wanted to mention that. They had Lance Archer on the pre-show. He joined Renee and RJ City and Jeff Jarrett at one point because they were basically just talking for most of the pre-show, hyping up the show. And Lance Archer joined them. And he was with them for a little bit and just commenting on various things. And it really hit me, you know, listening to him there, like, okay, this guy can talk and talk like a normal human being, no less. But, you know, he's got a certain charisma to him, but we don't get to really see him or hear much from him on TV. And when we do, it's like, you know, everybody dies and, you know, that's pretty much it. But he's somebody who maybe would benefit from being allowed to speak more and show more of his personality on these shows. You know, it's hard to believe that Archer is, I think, almost 50. I mean, somebody can fact check me on that. I don't know. He doesn't look it, but he has been around for a long time though. So anyway, he came out during this match. He was actually over by commentary. So when the match was over, he gets in the ring. Roppongi Vice gets in the ring. They all start attacking Paragon and they're standing tall until out walks Brody King and Tomohiro Ishii. And Brody turns and looks as if they're waiting on a third man to come out. And then that third man turns out to be the ace, the president of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Hiroshi Tanahashi, in street clothes. He comes out on the ramp. He joins them. They make their way down to the ring. Fletcher was the last man standing after they wiped out the others. And so then Tanahashi dropped him with a sling blade, and Adam Cole lowered the boom on Kyle Fletcher. This did not need to be on the show. This is one of those matches I referred to earlier. This match did not need to be on the Double or Nothing card. It was a late addition anyway. They didn't even announce this until the last several days. People are going to say, oh, you know, well, it's the come down match. It's the buffer. This should have been on TV. This had no business this late. This had no business being on the show. This really didn't need to be on the show at all. But once you get into like 11:30 at night and you still have your, you know, big 40-minute main event yet to come, just cut the fucking match, okay? And put it on Dynamite. You can still do it. The big Dynamite show coming out of Double or Nothing. You can have it on the show on Wednesday. This is just a prime example of that. You know, there were fans in the crowd who were into it, or, you know, trying to kind of maybe in some cases will themselves into it. I'm not saying that the crowd was totally dead for the match, because they weren't. They weren't totally dead for it. You could tell that there were some fans. There was a fatigue that was setting in with some of the fans. There was certainly a fatigue setting in with me, and I'm sure other people who were watching this show. And I'm sure that I would have liked the match more if it would have happened on any other night but tonight. But that being said, I will say this one thing. Kyle Fletcher needs to win that TNT title from Adam Cole very soon. No later than Texas. Maybe they're going to save it for All In. Sometime between now and then, he needs to take the TNT championship away from Adam Cole and start his reign as the TNT champion. That is a must. There is no reason for it to be anybody else. It should be Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher is not going to hold the AEW world title anytime soon, but he should have gold. Now, after surviving this hellacious anarchy in the arena match, we were informed that Kenny Omega is going to defend his international championship against the winner of a tournament. And his title that starts on TV this week. And the title defense is going to take place on their Fyter Fest special, which is coming up on TBS on Wednesday, June 4th. There are no AEW pay-per-views in June, but they're going to have a few television specials. Fyter Fest is the first one. The following Wednesday is their summer blockbuster, I think they're calling it. And the Wednesday after that is their first show ever from Arena Mexico, which is going to be pretty cool. But there are no pay-per-views. Okay, so these are the big shows of the month for them. So he's going to defend his international championship against the winner of a tournament that kicks off on Dynamite this Wednesday in El Paso. And we're going to have on Saturday show Josh Alexander one-on-one against Brody King. Then on Collision, which they're taping on Wednesday, but it'll air next Saturday, Claudio takes on Commander. Máscara Dorada takes on Hechicero. The winners of those three bouts will then face Omega in the show in Denver, which is the show coming up on June 4th in Colorado. I think it's going to be a singles match. Or is it? No, is it going to be a four-way? Maybe it's a four-way match. You know what? That's what it is. It's not a proper tournament. Them and their fucking tournaments. Okay, so basically the winners of these matches, it's going to be a four-way match. That's what it is. So the winners of those matches I just mentioned will join Omega, and there will be a four-way title defense on Dynamite, but that's not even the big story here. The big story here is they confirmed something that I reported on the podcast a few weeks ago, which is that that episode of Dynamite is not just going to be an episode of Dynamite. They're doing Dynamite and Collision back-to-back because there's going to be interruptions over on TNT for the NHL playoffs in the month of June. So Collision's going to get bounced around a little bit, and they're experimenting. And the experiment is a four-hour live block of AEW programming, I presume from 8 to 12. 4 hours of AEW on June 4th. And they didn't mention this, but I'm almost positive they're doing it again the following week for that summer blockbuster on June 11th. That's back-to-back weeks of 4 hours. Dynamite and Collision back to back. There's a desk here in front of me. I'm surprised that I don't have like a mouse on my forehead right now because I banged my head so hard on this desk when I saw that. 4 hours. 4 hours. After this 5.5 hour pay-per-view, 4 hours on back to back weeks. Why? Why? Why are you doing this to me? The main event was the finals of the Owen Hart Foundation tournament, with the winner going on to Texas at All In to challenge Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. It will be Will Ospreay here going one-on-one with Hangman Adam Page. That was our main event on this show. And they had a very good pre-match video package for Hangman that was shown. They zoomed in on his eyes, saying, "I need this." Then he power walked out to the ring. He had kind of like a pink and black gear that he was wearing, which was a nice tribute to it being the Owen Hart tournament. Then we got a piano version of Ospreay's music playing as we hear audio of his promo from last week, talking about how this is not about Hangman's redemption. This is about his ascension. Ospreay tried a slingshot dive early on, but he got caught, and Hangman hit a fallaway slam into the LED barricade. Back inside, Hangman launched Ospreay into the middle turnbuckle and gave a long stare out to the crowd. Ospreay attempted a counter into a stun dog, but Hangman delivered a snapback suplex and kept Ospreay grounded. Page ramped up the kicks at Ospreay's request. He said, "Lay him in. Give me what you got." So that kind of woke him up. There was a forearm battle that we got here between these two men until Ospreay switched to a chop. So Page waffled him with a forearm. The Stun Dog Millionaire led to a corkscrew kick, which sent Hangman outside, where Ospreay met him with a Sasuke special. Torture rack applied by Ospreay, who swung into a blue thunderbomb for a near fall. So Hangman got low-bridged. Ospreay then teased the dive, but he got shoved off, and Page hit his springboard lariat, followed by an Orihara moonsault. Back inside, there was a powerbomb into a high stack that got Hangman a two count before he turned it into a sharpshooter. Ospreay fought for the ropes, got to his feet, threw some chops. Hangman no-sold them, hit a Saito suplex. Hangman hit one big boot, went for another one. Ospreay, though, connected on a wall walk in Zaguri, and he wanted an Os cutter. Page, though, clotheslined him in midair. Ospreay didn't go down. He did not go down. He hit a hook kick. Page, though, folded him up with a lariat, and then Hangman charged. Ospreay hit a standing Spanish fly into a double down. The crowd at this point was going nuts because we had a lot of back and forth here between these two, and these people were hanging on to everything that these two men were doing. Ospreay woke himself up. That little delay, though, allowed Hangman to crotch him in the corner, and Ospreay slid out, and he trapped Page with his cheeky Nando's kick. He went up the ropes. Page, though, headbutted free, and he hit a buckshot, kind of a variation of a buckshot lariat. Hangman then went for a proper buckshot. Ospreay, though, hit a hook kick. He draped Page over the top, and he followed with a shooting star press onto his back. Because, again, much like Omega during Anarchy in the Arena, and I said he was hanging on the top rope, same thing here with Hangman. Only in this case, shooting star nails Hangman, tries to get a pinfall out of it, but he only gets two. Page cut off a corner charge by Ospreay, did a moonsault out of the corner into a tombstone for two of his own. Ospreay tried a Styles Clash, but Page floated over into an Angel's Wings for a near fall. Excalibur then questioned if that was instinct or is that an homage to Christopher Daniels. So Page tried a best moonsault ever, but he missed, and Ospreay threw a wild hidden blade. Only thing is, Hangman rolled to the ropes. Presence of mind. Rolls to the ropes. They fight to the apron. Ospreay blocks a big boot into a powerbomb. And when he powerbombed him on the apron, if you watch, like, the back of Hangman's head just smacked the apron. Followed by a Styles Clash. Yes, he gave him a Styles Clash off the apron to the floor. Now, upon landing on the ground, I mean, Hangman was fine, but the replay showed Ospreay's leg kind of jammed underneath both of them. I mean, he was fine, but like he was selling that he might have a leg injury. Page was able to break the count back inside. Ospreay was waiting for him, though, hit an Os cutter for a two count. Then he hit a hidden blade. Flush. But again, Hangman managed to kick out at two. Ospreay lit him up with strikes, and he had to be pulled away from Hangman by Bryce Remsburg. He was starting to get a little violent, and so the referee pulled him away. Page, though, teased the buckshot lariat. He got booted out to the Spanish announce table. Ospreay then goes outside, and he's starting to get some boos from the crowd. So Ospreay clears the table off. He's going to give him a Tiger Driver, a Tiger Driver 91, through this announce desk here. Page is trying to fight it, and he is about to try a Deadeye on top of the announce desk. There's just one little problem. The table collapses before he can actually complete the move. And so they fall down, and it was scary because the way they fell, it looked like maybe Ospreay got hurt. It was scary. Thankfully, they seemed to be okay. And Page said basically, fuck it. He picked him up and gave him a Deadeye on the debris, on the remnants of what used to be the announce desk. And then back inside, he was looking for a buckshot. Ospreay stumbled backwards, though, into the ropes on the opposite side. And he's using the ropes to pull himself back up. And Ospreay slowly begins to lower his elbow pad as he's staring across the ring at Hangman. Hangman does the same thing. So we got that little shootout that Ospreay had promised us on Dynamite last week. Ospreay flipped him off. He charged in, and Page hit the buckshot first, turned him inside out, only got two. This was the closest near fall of the match so far. Page wanted another buckshot. This time, though, Ospreay took his head off with a hidden blade, and he quickly followed with a Stormbreaker. Page, though, managed to kick out. Ospreay went for one last hidden blade. Page collapsed. And Ospreay, like, literally, as Ospreay is coming in for the hidden blade, Hangman just, he drops. So he missed. Ospreay signaled for a V-trigger, and he connected. But as he went for a one-winged angel, Page countered out of it into Swerve's big pressure finish. Ospreay, though, got his boot right on the rope, right on the middle rope at the last possible second. This is a great near fall. And the fans reacted big to that because they thought maybe that was it. But he got his foot on the rope. Page wanted a buckshot. Ospreay floated over into a Stormbreaker attempt, which Page flipped out of into a lariat. Page ran to the ropes, hit a proper buckshot lariat, and finally, 37 minutes into this match, Hangman Adam Page pins Will Ospreay to win the 2025 Owen Hart Foundation tournament. He has punched his ticket to Texas. The Cowboy will ride into the Lone Star State to challenge Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. When the match was over, Bryce Remsburg, he wrapped the Owen Hart Foundation belt around Hangman's waist. Confetti is raining down. Pyro is shooting off. They throw the graphic up for All In to make that main event official. Page goes up the ramp. He's staring at the Owen Hart Cup, okay, which is on a pedestal on stage. And he walks back to the ring. Now, Will Ospreay is sitting in the ring, all dejected. His back is turned, so he can't see that Hangman is walking back to the ring. It was like Cody sitting in the middle of the ring when he lost to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 39. Hangman gets into the ring. Now Ospreay looks up and sees him, you know, standing over him. And he gets to his feet. Hangman extends his hand. And Ospreay accepts, and they shake hands, and Hangman celebrates his win as they go off the air. This was an outstanding main event to close out a great tournament here. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give both these men here a standing ovation. I'm going to give these men a good cheer because they deserve it. This was a great tournament. This was the best Owen Hart tournament yet that they've done. And the fact that they actually closed this pay-per-view, which is the first time they've done this, where they actually closed the show and main evented with the final of the Owen Hart tournament, I think speaks well to how the tournament was booked this year. It felt important. We had some great matches out of it. Was it too long? Maybe. Were there too many near falls? Absolutely. They went crazy with the near falls down the stretch. And this is another problem. It's not just an AEW problem, but it happens a lot more in AEW, for being honest. Where they just go over, especially in these big pay-per-view matches, where they just go overboard on the kickouts. And there's always like a moment in these matches where that one kickout where it feels like, all right, that was one too many. I did have that feeling here in this match in the last few minutes, but I love the match. And I love that I was so convinced that Ospreay was winning. When they first announced the brackets and everything, I said, okay, Ospreay's my pick, could be Hangman. But it really felt to me like this was Ospreay's tournament to lose. And even though I said coming in, like, it could go either way, I was pretty sure that Ospreay was going to win. And then he didn't. And Hangman won. And I like that. Because I don't mind either one of these men being the one to go on to beat Jon Moxley so long as they win. And they take the AEW championship from him and they can move on from this Death Rider stuff. I like the callbacks, too, to their old rivals. So you had, you know, Omega's one-winged angel that Ospreay tried to use, Hangman trying to use big pressure from Swerve. So it just showed, and this is the story they were telling, that they were so desperate to win, and they had thrown everything they could at the other man, that now they were resorting to the signature moves from their rivals. So that was a neat little thing they did there down the stretch towards the end. I don't know what Will Ospreay does now at All In. I got to give this some thought. I'm not really, they haven't really hinted towards anything. So I'm not really sure what his match is going to be on that show, but we know what Hangman's going to be doing. And I wish I could sit here and tell you that, well, it's going to be Hangman. And Hangman's going to go to All In and he's going to win the championship. I'm not convinced of that. We'll see what TV looks like in these next few weeks. Maybe I'll feel a little more, you know, confident about things. But with Darby Allin's mountain climb being done and him being back now, back on the ground, I don't know when he'll be back on TV. But it just feels to me like that belt belongs to him. And I don't know if they want anybody else but him to be the one to take that championship from John Moxley, because it was Moxley, not even the Death Rider, it was Moxley who took him out and threw him down that flight of stairs. And when was that? That was like December. He threw him down the stairs. He's the one who told Darby, "You'll never be the champion." All these things that seem to be building to the eventual title win, like, oh yeah, you told me I can't do something? Well, I'm going to prove you wrong, right? The story is there. Nobody can deny the story is there. And Darby is popular enough with this audience that they will buy into him as the AEW World Champion, even if you don't. And there's a lot of people out there that don't think Darby Allin would be a believable world champion. But to this audience, you know, he's an AEW original. And they love him. And they gave him the rub by putting Sting with him, right, for all those years. Darby's their guy. They're going to put that belt on Darby at some point. Question is, do they want him to be the one to beat Moxley, or are they okay with somebody else doing it and then him winning the title from that person? And if so, can you honestly envision Hangman winning the championship in July and being the one to dethrone the Death Riders, and then 2 months later or 3 months later, you know, it All Out or Wrestle Dream, they take the title away from him and put it on Darby? I mean, it would make more sense if it was Moxley. I just don't want to see Moxley hold on to that championship for another 3 months. You know, again, the idea of him holding that title hostage until September or October. I said this on the podcast earlier today. It makes me want to vomit. You've got this big stadium show that you've been building towards, like your biggest show of the year. How do you not do a title change on this show? It should be Hangman. Hangman has his own story arc. He said it on Dynamite last week. I've wasted 2 years of my life consumed by hate and grief. I haven't won a single championship. I haven't won a tournament. Now he has. The story is there for him, but I worry about the Darby element potentially delaying things. I'm not as confident about him dropping that title at All In as I was maybe a few weeks ago. But it has to come to an end. We can't keep dragging this out. What did you think of Double or Nothing 2025? 64.2% thumbs up for tonight's show, 17% thumbs in the middle, and 18.7% thumbs down. So that is the Double or Nothing poll with 64% thumbs up so far. Almost 1,500 votes in. You guys can go vote at Sala Monster. That is where the poll is up. So we can get into your super chats now. That's right. Roderick points out Moxley also punked Darby out of his number one contender spot to get to Bryan Danielson. So Darby has to get revenge for that too. I mean, again, I hate to admit it because I really just want this Moxley thing to fucking end. But the story for Darby is such that everything seems to be tailor-made for him to be the one to end Moxley's run. And now, I mean, my God, he unfurled the AEW flag on top of Mount Everest, the first pro wrestler to ever do that. He's going to be Tony, the darling for Tony Khan now. Tony Khan's going to roll out the red carpet for this guy after what he did for him. You don't think Tony doesn't want him to be the champion after that? Let's take a look at your messages here. Make sure I don't miss anybody. Thank you guys for the support. We are at 519 likes. So we're going to be doing Be the Booker here in a little bit. At least we're going to get the one round. Late as it is now 2:30 in the morning. Are we sure the pay-per-view's over? Is there a post-show with more matches? Hey, JS Warrior 19. came in earlier with a $20 Super Chat, JS. Thank you, brother. As a Randy Orton fan, I do see a lot of similarities in Miles Bourne fans, or Harsh. I don't see it that way. I don't know what he's saying here. Orton is known for being super smooth in the ring, and that's incredibly hard to imitate. Miles Bourne is just a good wrestler. Well, since when is that a crime? Yeah, I mean, look, comparing anybody to Randy Orton is fucked, because I would hate to have to be compared to him. Like, if I were a wrestler, I would hate to be constantly compared to him because people think I look like him or whatever. And so it's like, oh, well, let's see if he measures up. Yeah, that would suck. But Miles Bourne is also very young, and who knows? Maybe one day he'll be on that level. But let's not go comparing him to Randy Orton's in-ring ability just yet. Roscoe P. Coltrane, thank you for the super chat. EJ Slemp, I asked a few weeks ago, Detroit or Milwaukee for my annual trip with my brother? We picked Detroit. That's what I meant on the SmackDown stream. Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure what you meant by that. There was no context to it. So I was like, what's he talking about? The house has spoken. Says, really enjoyed the show tonight. Cheers. Thank you, brother. It was a very good show. Sicko for life. Adam Cole is a nothing burger at the moment and should lose the TNT title to Ricochet at All In. Do you agree? I think he should lose it to Kyle Fletcher. If he lost it to Ricochet, I'd be okay with that too. But I really think Fletcher would benefit from that. Fire Panda, thank you again for the 50 from earlier. I have a horse named Mayo and Mayonnaise. Aha. Ed K says, has anarchy in the arena jumped the shark? Some people may think it has. You know, it's their annual staple on that show. WWE has War Games at Survivor Series. AEW has Anarchy in the Arena at Double or Nothing. I mean, in that regard, it's really no different. You try to build an interesting story with interesting teams that makes sense. And I would say if you have a year where it doesn't make sense, you don't do it. You skip a year. In this case, though, they have the Death Riders, which is the top heel faction. So it actually made sense to do an Anarchy in the Arena match. Griga says, how's it going, Solo? What did I miss? What did you miss? I got you covered here. You got to go back to the beginning of the review. Oz and Glorious, 48 months of channel membership. Thank you for staying up and doing these streams, Solo. You're very welcome. Though I have to be up in about 4.5 hours on Memorial Day, no less. Griga, thank you for gifting a channel membership to Mike E. Oz says, great show. I would give it a 10 out of 10 if I wasn't subjected to Daniel Garcia and Daddy Magic, so it'll have to be a 9. And definitely worth the $50. Hangman needs to win it all in. He got fucked over in favor of corporate monkey Phil, and it needs to be corrected. And says Solomonster, the world's only Athena fan. I don't know who you're hanging out with, brother. She got a lot of fans out there, including Mercedes, who was talking her up in some interview the other day and saying basically the same thing I've been saying, which is that she needs more people to see her. Maybe the Ring of Honor fans can go be mad at her now that she said the same fucking thing that I've said a million times. Alexander, people don't find it odd that Mercedes is probably going to have the mid-card title and the main women's title? Maybe she'll forfeit the TBS title. Like when the Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, he forfeited the Intercontinental title. That way she doesn't have to be beat. I don't know. Tony doesn't want to beat her. He spent a lot of money to get her. He doesn't want to beat her. Maybe he's got a crush. Maybe he's smitten. Ed Swoggle, easily tonight was the best show I have ever been to. So Ed Swoggle was actually at the show tonight. I think they had about 8,000. Is that what it was? I think WrestleTix said they had about 8,000 people in the venue. TLA says, morning, Solo. Morning, TLA. Chris Manson, Mercedes is a workhorse champion on one of the most dominant runs. WWE had a four-year champion. You guys will be okay. I don't see what one has to do with the other, but I'm more concerned about all the other women that have nothing to fight for now. You should be concerned about that too, if you actually gave a shit about the women's division there and not just one person. Duff's Vids, what's the scariest thing to read in Braille? Do not touch. Derek J. Speaks, I'll take bodies over Fiend any day. I will too. I'll take that 10 times out of 10 over Fiend. Duffs says NASA is launching a satellite to say sorry to aliens. They're calling it the Apollo G. Carlos with 42 months of channel membership. Much love, Solo. The main event had me so emotional, and when Hangman won, I ran across the room in tears. The cowboy is coming for his gold. He is indeed. He better win. He better win. Stephen Chapa with 49 months of channel membership. That might be the longest out of anybody here. Thanks for the late review, Solo. Great show. Some good and interesting questions going forward. Can't wait to go to All In. Where is All In? Is it's not in Chicago this year. It's in Toronto, right? Scotiabank Arena. Duffs, you've seen that look on my face many times. Like a disappointed dad. Raph. Watch with friends tonight. Excellent pay-per-view. We were all shocked and elated that Paige won. Also, Willow padlocked ear plus Swerve stapled tongue was horrific. The ear didn't bother me as much as the stapled tongue did. That's just stupid. Sarah, Ospreay versus Hangman, what a main event. Probably currently the best AEW pay-per-view main event in 2025. Well, to be fair, I mean, that's a low bar. that's a low bar. I mean, some of those recent pay-per-view main events have really fallen off a cliff. This was sort of a return to form. Alex says they should have played Brie mode. Thank you, Alex. No, they shouldn't. Duff's Vids, the word none is just the letter N doing a cartwheel. If you stab a cereal box, are you a cereal killer? Are oranges named oranges because oranges are orange? Or is orange named orange because oranges are orange? We just had that one recently. Are you recycling jokes now, or did Sidro use that one and you're using Sidro? I know I had just heard that one like last week. Hey, Diego in the chat says, thanks for all the jokes. It got me my work crush's number. See, that's how you break the ice, man. You got to break... But see, you got to have the right joke. The serial killer one, that's a good one. The oranges one, if you use the oranges one or the nun, the cartwheel one, like you're going to get slapped or tased or maced. Like that's how bad that one was. Fire Panda, 4 hours of AEW with 2.5 hours being Learning Tree promos. Do you feel the mana now? No, I feel the mania now. It's setting in. Hallelujah says, you are not a serial killer. You are a box cutter. Stephen Cap says, smoking brisket and enjoying the recap. Great show. Well, now you got me hungry, and it's almost 3 o'clock in the morning, so that's a problem. The Juliet says, so the HOG World Champion showed up at Battleground. Yes, he did. Long overdue. His time is coming. He worked his ass off to get to this point. I'm actually surprised it took this long with this partnership for him to make an appearance. But Mike Santana was at Battleground tonight. Apparently, he'll be wrestling on NXT this Tuesday. And it looks like things are going to play out exactly the way that I pitched them on the podcast today for where I think things are going for Mike Santana and the TNA World title. But he is still our HOG World Champion. 500 plus days and counting. He will actually be wrestling Tomohiro Ishii at our next event, which is on Money in the Bank Saturday. So, fuck Money in the Bank. You could tune into the HOG show. Puerto Rican weekend. It's going to be a big night. Well, you hit the likes goal. Hey, Fire Panda says, yeah, there it is. There's the oranges joke. We hit the likes goal. And let's not wait any longer. Let's be the booker, shall we? Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Oh, this is a late edition. This is a late edition of Be the Booker. Let's make it a good one. What a rush. The Legion of Doom. Yes.
Oh, what a rush.
Hawk and Animal. That's how you start tag team Be the Booker right there. And that is exactly what I did not want to see. But you know what? LOD against the Toxic Turtles? LOD is going to destroy the Toxic Turtle. They're going to turn the Toxic Turtles into turtle soup. And it will be very entertaining. So I will give that the bell. Tell me you wouldn't want to see LOD whoop these two guys. Come on. You're lying if you say no. LOD will pin them before their music even finishes. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a fun squash. Yeah, that's the second time in the last, I think, week or two we landed on the Turtles. All right, women's Be the Booker. We have Jade Cargill, who is going to attempt to qualify for Money in the Bank on SmackDown this Friday. Jade Cargill. And her opponent will be... Choose four women and book a tag team match. Book the Toxic Turtles for House of Glory, Solomonster. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. They don't have a phone. They don't text. Their little rat friend does. And the only way to communicate with them is to go down into the sewer. And in New York, I am not going down into the sewer. So, therefore, there will be no negotiation. But now we have to book a women's tag team match. So, Jade Cargill needs a partner. Let's find out who her partner is going to be. Jade Cargill and Naomi. Well, well, well. Isn't this the interesting development of the night here? Jade Cargill and Naomi are going to be tag team partners. Well, the worm has certainly turned here, hasn't it? They will be taking on, oh my, Rhea Ripley. I do love skulls. I even got one in my logo. I don't know what she's doing to this skull in this image, but it has my attention. Can they coexist? Yes. We'll find out. Can Jade and Naomi coexist? They're going to be taking on Rhea Ripley and Lita. What a fucking match. Oh my God. Rhea Ripley and Lita against Naomi and Jade Cargill. That's a match right there. And we need one more. We need one more. We have Kota Ibushi. This is the real Kota Ibushi. When Ibushi was in peak form, he had the IWGP title. He had the IWGP Intercontinental title. This right here was the Ibushi in peak form here. He was one of the best in the world. Let's see. Kota Ibushi taking on Orange Cassidy. Yeah, people like to shit on Orange Cassidy. And I, for one, am happy he's taking a little bit of a... I don't know where he... Actually, I think he's hurt. So I'm not happy he's hurt. But, you know, him taking a break is probably a good thing. Freshen him up for the next time we see him. But if you're being honest, when you put Orange Cassidy in the ring in a big match, he usually has some low-key bangers. So Kota Ibushi and Orange Cassidy would have a hell of a match. There you go. We got ourselves a good thing. We had the one round, so we got ourselves a clean sweep. 3 out of 3. You'll love to see it. And Oz and Glorious, any chance you could live stream during the 4 hour AEW block? I'm so tired of listening to Excalibur talk down to me about lactic acid and diverticulitis. I mean, you're not tired of hearing Excalibur talk about guys hitting various moves with alacrity. We got to make a list of all the different Excalibur buzzwords, like pile driver. Of course, that's one of them. Sorry. You know what? I may have to consider doing that. I hate doing watch-alongs. I mean, people usually prefer the reviews anyway. But the idea of actually streaming during the show and being done by midnight or 12:30 is somewhat appealing. I may have to consider that. I may have to think about that. Solo might skip Collision. You know what? I would be inclined to just review Dynamite and not even watch Collision, but you know what these fuckers would do. Whatever the big main event matches are that night, they would just save it for like the fourth hour of the show. So it's kind of tough to review, you know, 2 hours when there's another 2 hours left to go. Otherwise, that's totally what I would do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I hate this. Hopefully it's only the 2 weeks, though. We'll see. Alex says, do you think TNA can snatch Cena for a one-time match at Slammiversary, or will Trick Williams be their number one option instead? I mean, I'm inclined to say no. I mean, Joe Hendry has said he really believes it's going to happen. He's a very positive person. He's very optimistic. If there was going to be an opportunity to get Cena, that would be it, because that's a big show at the UBS Arena, Slammiversary here in New York. If they can't get Cena for that show, I don't think they get him. I don't know where Bound for Glory is going to be, but I feel like if they were going to get him, it would be for Slammiversary. So, do I think it's going to happen? I'm going to say no. But we'll see. People have doubted Joe Hendry before. He seems pretty confident he can make it happen, so we shall see. Cena does not believe. But again, like, what kind of match would that even be? I mean, it'd be huge for TNA just to get him there. But I mean, as a match, it's like, what the hell? Well, like, what? Am I supposed to be excited about this? Like, I, there are very few John Cena matches at this point that get me excited. Him and Punk, they have a certain chemistry together where I just feel like the magic is probably still there. We saw a little bit of that at the Elimination Chamber. I think they could pull out something special. I do. Maybe not as good as what they did, you know, 14 years ago, but like, I feel like they could pull out something special. But beyond that, there's no Cena matches that interest me. There's no Cena matches at this point that excite me. You know, you see what he does when he's out there, and it's like very basic, very, very boring. Nothing to get excited for. Kicking the dick, you know. It's like, who gives a shit? Who cares? How long before we get Travis Scott back? It's only a matter of time. How many appearances does he have left? Technically, it's not a WWE appearance. Well, technically, you may be right. When is Slammiversary? Was it July 20th? It may come down to his availability. Is Cena busy or not that day? That it may just come down to that. But see, Cena has said before, like, he doesn't lobby for things. So, like, who would even make the request? John Cena's not going to make the request. Like, oh, can I work Slammiversary? Like, he doesn't give a shit. If WWE tells him to or asks him to, he'll do it. It's probably Joe Hendry who's going to have to go to them and be like, hey, can we get John for Slammiversary? You know, like, Cena's not going to say anything. Hendry's going to have to be the one to annoy them and try to get them to ask Cena if it's okay. And if he's cool with it, then they'll do it. But I just think it's a very pie in the sky thing. I don't know. I'd be surprised if it actually happens. Anyway, thank you guys for hanging out very late with me here on a Monday morning, early Monday morning. I'll be live with you again Monday night after Monday Night Raw. So very soon, we'll do this all over again later tonight. Please go back and check episode 914 of The Sound Of. Over 2 hours long, a lot of content on there, not just talking Battleground and Double or Nothing, which are now over, but full Saturday night's main event review. Talking also about the Zoe Stark injury, Goldberg's retirement match. We have more details on that. Dave Meltzer arguing with Grok on Twitter. Rossi Ogawa comments that he made about his world champion in Marigold. Dark Side of the Ring review on The Sheik. A couple of other interesting news and notes as well. And the WrestleMania story. I get into this whole WrestleMania being moved from New Orleans to Las Vegas and my thoughts on that. So be sure to go back. You'll have your early morning listening for your commute or at the gym or wherever you may be. So that's episode 914. Go check that out. I'm going to get out of here. I'm very tired. Thank you for the support. Be well. Stay safe. For those of you celebrating, happy Memorial Day. I hope you guys have a day off. And I will see you back here in less than 24 hours. For the Raw on Netflix review, right back here live on YouTube. Until then, take care, guys.